If you're a would-be startup founder looking for venture capital, it's there, but you're gonna have to work for it. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. The world of venture capital is pretty mysterious, especially if you're an entrepreneur trying to make your startup dream a reality. And the center of the VC world is one street in Menlo Park, California, in the heart of Silicon Valley, called Sand Hill Road. Scott Cooper is managing partner of one of its most famous firms, Andreessen Horowitz. He's got a new book out called Secrets of Sand Hill Road, Venture Capital and How to Get It. But a big critique of VC is that it is so concentrated on this one road and a tiny group of investors who have historically picked startup founders who are a lot like them. I asked Cooper if he feels a responsibility to not just explain VC, but change how it works.
You're absolutely right, which is the industry has not been done a great job on inclusion generally, and that's true both with female entrepreneurs as well as with entrepreneurs of color. Ultimately, I think the best thing we can do is try to address what we would call a network connectivity problem, which is we know there are great and smart entrepreneurs everywhere. And the question is, how do we reach out to those communities and make them feel like there is actually a home for them here? One of the things I do hope that we get out of the book is if we can demystify the business and make it feel accessible to people who are not in New York and Boston and California, I think that actually might have a positive impact from overall diversity and inclusion in the industry.
What is the next step? Like, you're clear in the book that you're not handing out Mark Andreessen's phone number. I get it. But, you know, let's say I am an entrepreneur in Iowa and I have a great idea and I read this book and I want money. Like, how do they get in? How do they translate that into action?
Yeah, so I think one of the most important things to do is to prove your mettle as an entrepreneur in some respects by showing your creativity and your willingness to kind of walk through walls and find a way to get an introduction into a firm. So we get a number of people, of course, who will send cold emails in, and we look at those, but it's very hard to obviously kind of get those into the right hands. 95% of what we do comes from some referral source that at least we've known of or seen at some period of time. We like to see an entrepreneur find, you know, how many degrees of freedom do they need before they can find someone who actually knows us that can get something into our hands. And that's the same skill they're going to have to do when they're recruiting employees. It's the same skill they're going to need when they're trying to identify customer opportunities. And so that's our best advice, is kind of be persistent in trying to find a way in the door.
That sounds a little passive, I have to be honest. Like, we'll just wait here for these awesome people to find us, and then we'll know how great they are. Like, do you also, or should you also, have the equivalent of sort of a publishing house slush fund, like a scouting?
So you're absolutely right, which is the way our business works is some of the stuff is we're lucky enough to have relationships who say, hey, I met this great person the other day. But the vast majority of our activities, you can think about them as outbound activities where we might have a thesis on an industry. And so as part of that, we're doing research and trying to identify the 5 or 10 companies who are doing something interesting in that space. That really is, quite frankly, you know, kind of a huge part of what the job is of being a general partner at a firm like this.
I will say it wasn't until last June, I think, right, that Andreessen hired its first female general partner. How important is that?
It's very important. And you're right. It did take us a while to do that. We've since hired 3 general partners. And one of the things that we recognized was as we were recruiting for GPs, we had a hard requirement, which is you had to have been a founder or CEO in order to be a general partner candidate. And not surprisingly, over time, we recognized, of course, that that really narrowed the funnel of diverse candidates, just given the fact that the industry itself of founders and CEOs is not very inclusive. And so we felt like it was better for us to say, hey, if we relax that constraint and really focused on what is the unique quality that makes you attractive to entrepreneurs in your field, you could be somebody like Connie Chan, who's an expert in China. You could be somebody like Katie, who's an expert in crypto. Those types of things ought to count just as well and be just as important as whether you're a founder or CEO. So that's really helped us make progress, I think, on the inclusion side.
Your firms are, like, there might be a lot of people, but Andreessen has 15 partners, which is actually more.
Right.
Than most big name firms. Like, it's small groups of people who are, of course, fallible, who are really king and queen makers. Like, you know, I think people don't realize that the central group of decision makers is so small, and that introduces bottlenecks in terms of how many boards you can be on,
right,
and how many meetings you can actually take. And then your thinking is going to be limited to the people in the room and their lived experiences. Like, is that something that people don't understand? And is there any way to change that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know how you change it, but I think it's a real important thing to understand. And you mentioned it from a bottleneck perspective. If you think about a general partner at Andreessen Horowitz or any other firm, there is some finite number of deals you can do, right? And, you know, we debate this all the time, quite frankly. And we have some partners who have 15 plus deals who think they can do 25. And then we've got some who are at 10 who feel like they're overdrawn at this point in time. But what that means is that the opportunity cost for every time you kind of take one of those chits off the table is extremely high, right? Because it means, you know, you've now for probably an 8 or 10 year time frame, given up one of those slots on your dance card. And so it really does become the central, you know, kind of limiting factor for scale in the business. I don't know if there's a way to change that. I think you could change it if you weren't an active participant in the company post-investment, right? So you can imagine, I don't know if this would work, but you can imagine a venture capital firm who says, look, we're never going to take a board seat. We're not going to be involved post-investment. And then you kind of, you know, eliminate that potential constraint on growth. I'm not sure in this day and age that that's attractive from an entrepreneur's perspective, because I do think, you know, they're looking for something other than capital, but it's at least a theoretical possibility for how you might, kind of loosen that constraint.
And then finally, there is this sort of like tech lash.
Yeah.
Now, right? You've got sort of this new consumer awareness about privacy, particularly in your investment field, right?
Absolutely.
As you're looking at the cloud and cybersecurity, God help us, and data privacy and all of that. How is that affecting the questions that you're asking of the entrepreneurs that you're talking to?
Yeah, I think it's having a real impact. And I think I think what we all have and are starting to recognize as an industry, and, you know, kind of it probably shouldn't have taken us this long to do so, is that the impact and the pace at which technological change is happening is just so much faster than it's been before. And, you know, you're out there too. You know, we're lucky enough to live in a place like Silicon Valley where most of what we see as consumers is we just see the consumer utility and we can see the consumer value of a lot of these technologies. But I think for too long, we probably haven't had enough appreciation for how those technologies impact people in other ways, whether it's, to your point, privacy, whether it's job dislocation, you know, lots of other issues that are happening. And so one of the things that we're doing as a firm is trying to spend more time in D.C. and at least have an active dialogue with the regulators and policymakers and get out ahead of these issues and try and help them understand what's happening in the Valley and help us understand what are the concerns and issues that they might, you know, have as some of these technologies get deployed mainstream. So I think you're going to see, you know, I mentioned this theme, software is eating the world. If we're right about that, that means software is going to continue to enter into and integrate with lots more regulated industries over time. And so I think the onus is going to be on this industry to make sure that we are active participants in that dialogue. Otherwise, I think it's going to be very hard for us to be successful.
Does it become part of a, you know, set of questions that you ask, though? Like, are you asking yourself as a CEO, what is the worst possible way that my technology could be used?
Yeah.
And how do I anticipate that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we have we definitely are doing that. And I think that is a responsibility for the CEOs to do as well. It's not even just what's the worst possible way, but like how may the benefits of this be perceived differently from, you know, different communities or different players in the ecosystem? And so I think we bear a greater responsibility to think about those things. We may not get it right all the time. I think that's certainly the case, but at least I think these discussions are happening more at the board level, whereas I just don't think in the past, kind of those discussions were front and center. So I think as painful as this process might be, I think it's a good thing for us to go through and really understand and appreciate the consequences and implications of a lot of these new technologies.
Scott Cooper is managing partner of the venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz. And now for some related links. The first link is to our website, marketplacetech.org, where you will find the source code. That's the complete, unedited version of my interview with Scott Cooper. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there about how VC works, how it becomes more inclusive, and why it hasn't so far. And you can also find past source code interviews with some of our smartest guests, like, may I suggest the one with William Gibson, which will always be my favorite. All right, let's briefly turn to an unrelated link. So yesterday, of course, was WWDC, and Apple rolled out about a million different updates, a new OS for the iPad, an update to iOS for the phone, all kinds of features and fabulousness for the Apple Watch, a whole new pro-level desktop and monitor. It split iTunes into three separate apps, one for music, one for TV, one for podcasts. And may I just issue a little prayer right here that the podcast app gets its own team that actually cares about podcasts and has a budget to make the app work better than it has so far? Anyway. One thing I found super interesting, though, and surprising, was the lack of emphasis on iMessage at WWDC. I mean, here you have Facebook about to pivot its entire business to messaging. You've got the most dominant platform in China, WeChat, all built around messaging. It's like the social network killer. It's a potential home for bot interactions and advanced digital assistant features like Google is building. And this was a developers conference, so there could have been talk of app integrations with iMessage. I mean, I know Apple is pivoting to more of an entertainment platform, but my phone is still a communications device. And I kind of feel like there's a missed opportunity with iMessages here. Maybe they're working on it, but I thought it would at least get a mention. I do like the period tracking in the Apple Watch app, though. Kudos on that. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. Marketplace keeps you connected to news and information you need on the radio, on the web, and on the go. But we need your help so we can keep doing it and doing more. Consider becoming a Marketplace investor. When you donate today, your gift will go twice as far thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Give online at marketplace.org, and thanks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.